Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. This is a show dedicated to empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. And I firmly believe we must have an open mind. We must remain curious because there are always answers and solutions out there. And if you are open and willing and receptive, you can find that. I mean, I'm on my own health journey, and if you've been listening, you may know that I've actually had a diagnosis of a terminal brain tumor, which, according to the system, there's no cure other than radiation or chemo, which is never a cure, just prolongs your suffering. So I have embarked on a journey, and as a result, I have encountered amazing resources, amazing people. I have made huge changes in my life and in my diet, and I'm doing really well. And I will always appreciate any prayers you can send my way. Because this is a journey. This is what we're all about. We're all about tapping into the field of infinite possibilities. And the show brings you amazing people, amazing conversations that are on the leading edge of health and transformation. So today, I'm so pleased to have as my guest, Dr. Michael Diamante. We're talking about the truth about supplementation and nutritional testing. We're also going to be talking about another important topic, and that is candida and the connection between candida and the thyroid. So this is a really important topic for so many people. A little bit about my guest before I jump in. Michael Diamante is the founder of the Diamante Center for Clinical Nutrition. He is a co-creator of BioCybernetics, which is an unprecedented computer software program that is able to study blood work, mineral tests, and many other lab tests to determine exactly where your body is in balance, initially designed for aerospace purposes. As a practitioner for over 30 years, he is dedicated to improving the lives of his patients and helping them get back to living. He holds a doctorate of naturopathy and is a New York State certified clinical nutritionist. He is a professional member of the International American Association of Clinical Nutritionists, the American College of Nutrition, and is a member of the Scientific Advisory Board for the Clinical Nutrition Certification Board. He is listed in the Directory of Distinguished American Foods Research in Nutrition and Physiology. Wow. So it's such an honor and a pleasure to have you with us today, Dr. Diamante. What a history you have. What a dedication.
A lot of work. Yeah, true. This is true.
It's a lot of work because it's never ending, right? It's like an expanding universe.
No, it isn't. It's a progression. It's a progression. As you said, we're all on a journey. And the truth is out there, and it's a matter of finding it. The truth existed way before we started looking for it, so it's a matter of finding it.
Yes. And that's where we have to stay open, curious, and willing to learn. So there's so much we can talk about. I know I mentioned we're going to talk about candida and the thyroid, which is a passion of yours. But let's talk about what's happening in the general population that you see regarding supplementation and nutritional testing. What is it we need to know if we're unwell, if we're dealing with some challenges? I know people take down tons of vitamins, depending on the quality of what they're taking and the dosage, who knows if it's doing any good. What's your experience?
I'm an extremely strong proponent and have been my entire career, which started back in 1982, for testing people to find out what supplements they need. And not only in my postgraduate work, but also on a daily practice basis, I've observed people imbalancing themselves by taking the latest fad of the month nutrient. It's something that I'm actually going to write a book on with a colleague of mine named David Watts, who's the head researcher at Trace Elements, Inc., because it is a real problem. And I can go back and tell you a brief story that I think highlights this. When I was first out of school and started a practice, I had a chiropractor friend who lived in my area who referred a medical doctor to me as a patient. And this doctor had a long history of prostate problems, and he was having a lot of trouble. So the man came to see me, and he told me that that like 4 or 5 years ago, he started reading in the medical literature that zinc was good for the prostate and zinc possibly could help a lot of prostate problems. So he started taking zinc. And being a medical doctor, having that mindset, he only took zinc. He didn't look into anything else that might be needed. It was only zinc. So his prostate problem cleared up after taking the zinc, and he was fine for a few years. And then several months before he saw me, the prostate problem started to return. He was dumbfounded at this because he'd been taking the zinc, and he was very consistent with it. So he decided he would raise the zinc. Instead of taking 50 milligrams a day, he took 100. And a few days after he increased the dose of the zinc, the prostate problem just became acute. He ended up on antibiotics. And see, he tells me the story, and he's dumbfounded. And I tell him, well, immediately, I want you to stop the zinc, and I want you to start taking copper. And then we also performed a hair mineral test on the gentleman to see what his mineral levels were like. Well, he called me a week later and told me that since he was taking the copper, he was off the antibiotics, his prostate was much better, and he wanted to know why. He said, what did you know about this? So I told him, let's wait until your test comes in. The test comes in, and sure enough, he had taken so much zinc that he caused an extreme copper deficiency. Now, copper in your body is the regulator against fungal infections and bacterial infections. Your thymus gland mobilizes copper in your lymphatic system to almost in a way like electrocute infections, and that's how your own body's defenses work against bacterial infections. So this is an example of what happens when people take supplements without being tested and without monitoring themselves to understand how they could be throwing themselves out of balance. And I see this all the time. So we actually had estimated at one point that 30% of all the people who were coming to us had trouble because of the supplements they were taking, because they were taking the wrong ones, too high of a dose, or they were just abusing supplements, just like someone would abuse a drug.
So, you know, it's kind of like someone having a blindfold on and just dipping their hand into a bowl of supplements, because that's about as educated as we are as to what our body needs, the specific needs of our body. And we're all nutritionally unique, biochemically unique. So it makes sense. We've got to have some way to navigate the territory of what it is that our body is requesting or deficient in. And you probably find these days people are more deficient than ever before in key nutrients.
And that's true for a lot of reasons. It's due to the soils. The soils continually become depleted. It's due to the toxicity we have in our environment and the toxicity we have in our food and the very, unfortunately, extreme use of drugs, both over-the-counter, prescription, and otherwise, because they deplete nutrients from your system. And the vitamin companies and the health food stores, unfortunately, don't really help us that much, because they're apt to tell the consumer you can take whatever nutrient you want, it's all just going to wash out of your system if you don't need it. Well, that's not true. Vitamin C, the most innocent vitamin out there, if you take excessive amounts of vitamin C for a long time, it will cause a copper deficiency, as I was just describing, and it will also reduce your calcium levels. It can cause osteoporosis by taking excess vitamin C. But you're not going to hear this information because the vitamin companies, the health food store industries, they all have their parameters that they can operate and they can speak to. So you're not going to get into any of this like really more heavy-duty scientific jargon as I'm getting into, because they don't want that. They don't want to tell you that. But that is the truth. If you take too much of any mineral or any vitamin, you can throw yourself totally out of balance. And that doesn't mean I'm against supplements. I take handfuls of supplements a day, but I happen to test myself to make sure that I'm taking the things that I really need and things that aren't going to throw me out of balance, like my friend, the medical doctor, I just told the story about.
So, you know, going back to that topic of copper, do you think in the Indian tradition, copper is used a lot as utensils, drinking utensils and for jewelry?
It's because it's anti-bacterial.
Copper has benefits?
Well, it's because it's antibacterial. That's why copper is antibacterial. It's a precursor to coenzyme Q10, and it also forms a lot of enzymes that are highly anti-inflammatory, which is why you see copper now being used as a metal in different kind of wrist braces and ankle braces and all these things like that. It has those properties. But on the other hand, you'll never find a more miserable person in the world than finding someone who's copper toxic, someone who unfortunately lived in an old brownstone or an old house that had a copper plumbing, perhaps who had amalgam fillings, which are also copper. Everyone thinks that the silver amalgam fillings are mercury. Well, they're a copper mercury alloy. So when you get somebody who's copper toxic, copper toxicity is devastating to people. And that's a whole area which is interesting. I will tell you that from my experience and the experience of a lot of my colleagues, probably a minimum of 40% of all the medical conditions out there, conditions that people are put on all kinds of prescription drugs for, are actually caused by metal toxicities. Toxicities of arsenic, mercury, copper, cadmium, iron, lead. These elements are very abundant in our environment, unfortunately, and the body can absorb a lot of them, and they cause a whole host of medical conditions that are like household names, arthritis, whatever, it goes on and on the list.
And, you know, I had some comprehensive blood work done, and it was shown that I actually have mercury toxicity as well. Now, I used to have mercury amalgams. They were taken out a long, long time ago. But according to this holistic dentist that's working with me, he forbids all fish. All fish has to go off the menu. He says they all have mercury.
I totally understand that. But a blood test is not the way to go. Even a porphyrin test is not the way to go for the metals.
Yes. Yeah.
The most important test you can do for toxic metals is a hair analysis. And there are many labs that do this. They've been doing this for years. But a hair analysis is the most important test you can do to ascertain your toxic metal levels, because hair is a tissue. And a hair analysis shows you the amount of the metal in your tissues that is built up and stored in your body. A blood test only shows you what your body is able to transport or move around. A urine test or a stool test only shows you the amount that it could excrete, you see? So they all have a use. But in terms of really ascertaining what your body's load is, the hair is by far the best.
Okay, good to know. I'll mention that. But I know he did a porphyrin test too. But anyway, the point is we are loaded with heavy metals that are so disruptive to our system. And so before we go any further, let's just talk about how people can contact you and get the proper type of nutritional testing. What do they need to do, and what does it cost?
Yeah, they can easily find me on my main website. It's www.health-truth.com. They can find me there easily.
Health.truth.com. Okay. And then
it's health- or hyphen truth.
Oh, okay. Health-truth.com. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then what's the next step? They need to make an appointment. You do conference appointments?
Yeah, it's very simple. We have a platform that they can come on, and they can speak to me and see me directly, or we can do it by phone. It depends on where they are. But we only do virtual. We no longer do in-person consultations. We only do them virtually, because we have people all over the world that come to us. So to make it convenient, we stick to just doing the virtual consultations, either with our platform.
Mm-hmm. That's the other question. Can people contact you and do this work anywhere in the world, like you said?
That they do. The 100% of our patient population is doing that right now.
Uh-huh. Good to know. Okay. So what is the cost if they were to do testing with you? Just giving my audience an idea.
That I couldn't answer, because it would depend on the person. Testing that we do can range anywhere between $100 to several thousand. It would depend on what tests were needed.
Okay. And what their health condition is, what their challenge is as well, of course.
Yeah.
Okay.
There are some routine charges with our Candida program, because the Candida program is very standardized. So that would be a different story. But for the average person walking in who's in a mystery as to what's wrong with them, then that would be different. We'd have to explore what testing they needed.
So I just highly encourage people to consider this kind of testing. If I didn't have comprehensive blood work done, which is not what my standard GP gave me, I would never have come to realize some of the underlying issues and deficiencies that have made me vulnerable. So it's really important to have a roadmap to know where you're going. You just can't wander off the reservation on your own and expect really address and bring the body back into balance. This is foundational. Unfortunately, it is not offered by traditional medical doctors. And even if they do blood work, don't you find that even if you do blood work with doctors, they don't know how to read it optimally? The reference ranges is okay and they're not.
There are two reference ranges that exist. One is the standard one doctors use, which is for pathology. And the second one is what I would call the nutritional range, which actually lies within that range that the doctor looks at. And when you use the nutritional range, you can actually get an idea of what's happening from a nutritional or chemical standpoint in your body as opposed to a pathological standpoint. But you have to be trained in that. That's something I learned close to 40 years ago. You have to be trained in this. The other issue, too, is that the doctor of the future, I hope, will use blood work like we're discussing, but he's also going to use genetic testing, and he's going to pair them. So when you go to a doctor in the future, my hope would be he would do a series of very accurate genetic testing on you, and at the same time is going to do the blood work. And he's going to look at both of them. He's going to play them back and forth. He's going to look to see what you're prone to genetically and then look at the blood work to see what's actually happening, to see whether or not any of the SNPs that you have that could possibly cause you disease or harm are in play right now. And if they're not in play, there are things that he could do nutritionally to help your body withstand them and to resist them. That's where we get into the discussion of telomeres, which is a whole other topic. But that would be my hope for the future. Doctors will use these two types of analysis. One would be genetic to see what could happen, and the other would be some kind of present time, real time test, which is saying what is happening.
So is this genomic testing you're talking about?
Yes, genetic testing. Genetic testing essentially looks at your genes, the genes you've acquired from your parents, and it looks to see what these genes will cause in the future. And then it also will give you a very good idea of what your overall risk factors are. And that's very important testing, especially since we have COVID. And the problem with COVID and the vaccine for that matter is that both of them contain idiosyncrasies which actually make your gene problems speed up. So this the most devastating thing about COVID and the vaccine that I know of is whatever's wrong with you, if you get COVID or the vaccine, whatever you're genetically programmed for, it's going to happen earlier in your life because of that spike protein. That spike protein is just devastating.
Right. Wow. Yeah, important information and resources to really assess ourselves. We're much more complicated than we can even imagine. So being able to put all those pieces together really will help us heal or stay healthy, have quality life. So let's talk about the other two passions you have, which is candida and the thyroid. So what are the statistics around candida? How prevalent is candida in the population, do you think?
About 30% of the U.S. population has it at any given time, and probably less than 5% know they have it at any given time because it produces symptoms which are just so unpredictable. And when a person first starts to develop candida, it usually will occur after taking antibiotics or some kind of steroid medication, even birth control pills or estrogen medications or something as innocent as antacids, Tums and Rolaids, if you abuse them, could cause candida. And the person is first going to notice that they are more sluggish and more fatigued than usual. And then they're going to start noticing cognitive problems. Their memory starts to go. Then they start getting GI problems. They start getting gas, bloating, constipation, diarrhea. Then they could develop a rash. They can develop eczema. They start becoming very allergic. And the next thing you know, they're chemically intolerant. They can't go down the aisle in the supermarket where the cleaning solutions are without getting a headache. Now, those symptoms, which are the most common of candida, are all very, very, very different. So there's very, very difficult to put a pattern together for most people looking at those symptoms. Arthritis, as a matter of fact, rheumatoid arthritis is a very common complication of having candida, because candida will cause intestinal permeability. It causes a weak or leaky gut, and then all types of toxins and antigens and allergens can then go settle in your joints and inflame them, and that's what we know of as rheumatoid arthritis. So candida causes so many problems and so many symptoms which are disrelated to each other that it makes the person very hard for the person to associate any of this and figure it out.
So let's just back up a bit. And when we talk about candida, let's define it so we know exactly what we're talking about.
Yes, sure. Candida is an overgrowth of a fungus slash yeast that lives in your intestinal tract. The most common species is Candida albicans. This is the species of a fungus, which is normal to find in the mucous membranes, the intestinal tract of all mammals. It's normal for it to be there in a small amount. When your biome, or your, like everyone's heard now on TV about probiotics, it's a big selling thing. When the natural occurring probiotics in your intestinal tract become disturbed, the candida is allowed then to grow out of control. Your normal probiotics, or what we call the microbiome, is what controls the candida and keeps it to be a subdominant part of your biome. Once that's disturbed, the candida grows out of control, just like the food chain was interrupted. And now candida becomes dominant, and it releases a lot of toxins into your body. It releases large amounts of alcohol. It releases neurological toxins. It releases mycotoxins, which are fungal-related toxins. And these toxins just mess you up. They send you on a spin, and they can cause, as I said, a whole host of symptoms. I think in one article that I wrote once, we counted 150 possible symptoms coming from candida. So when this happens, it's very confusing, very confusing. And to get rid of candida is very difficult, because candida, the one thing about candida is that most people continually relapse with it because it's never handled correctly in the first place. There are so many different nutritional products out there, so many diets, so many different treatments out there for it, which never work because they're missing some basics, which I found out because I dedicated myself to unraveling the mystery of candida back in the late 90s. And actually, the reason why my book is called The Candida Chronicles is because the book really chronicled my journey through going through all the false data and all the craziness that was out there to find out what the real truth of candida was and how it behaved and why it did what it did and why patients didn't get better and how you actually did get rid of it. That's why I call my book The Candida Chronicles.
And, I mean, this is so relevant for people dealing with UTIs these days, right? Because UTIs, which are infections, are treated with antibiotics and just creates this constant merry-go-round of increased candida, of UTI, and then more antibiotics, and it can become more and more chronic. I see this a lot.
And then you have, and don't forget Lyme disease. An interesting thing, and how I got involved with Lyme disease, is because so many patients who were treated with antibiotics would notice that their Lyme symptoms seemed to get better and they seemed to do well, but they still didn't feel right. And it was because they developed candida as a result of being treated for Lyme. The people kept thinking their Lyme was never gone. You see, that's the humorous part about it, if you want to call it that. But a person is being treated for Lyme, he's getting antibiotics to kill the spirochetes. And when that happens, it also kills your friendly bacteria, so you develop candida. So you've got one thing getting better and now a new problem, and it's totally confusing for the Lyme patient. Most Lyme patients who were treated correctly with antibiotics got rid of the Lyme, but they developed candida, and they continue to look for more and more advanced treatments for their Lyme because they thought they still had it.
And isn't it true that candida can be sexually transmitted between partners as well?
Yes, absolutely. It can be transferred if it's in your mouth, which candida grows in all the mucous membranes. So the vaginal area is a perfect host for it, which is why women get vaginal yeast infections. But it also can be in your mouth. When it overgrows in your mouth severely, it's called thrush, and it looks like a white furry tongue, which is what the Indians used to call candida in the mouth. They used to call it furry tongue.
So you have found and researched really effective solutions. So what are the most important things people need to know if they recognize that they're dealing with this ongoing infection of candida and tried all sorts of things, but nothing works? What do we need to know?
Well, some of the real big talking points in my book are the first thing you need to know about having candida is when you treat it with antifungals, you must rotate the antifungals. If you stay on the same antifungal for 21 days or more, the candida species will develop a drug resistance against the antifungal and the antifungal will stop working. That's number one. Second thing is there's a host of vitamins and supplements which make candida worse, and there's another list of them that stop the antifungals from working. Next thing is that probiotics are very typically given in supporting candida. The problem is probiotics are repelled by candida. When you have candida established in your gut and you take a probiotic, the probiotic goes through your intestinal tract. It seeks to reattach itself to the lining of your intestines. And what it ends up doing is it's just repelled by the probiotic. The probiotic pushes it away. So it's not possible for the probiotics to re-inoculate your intestinal tract while candida is there. But yet there are so many companies out there that are selling probiotics as the solution to candida, and they won't work. It is true, probiotics will help prevent candida and stop it once you get rid of the candida. So it's like a game of musical chairs. You've got to remove the candida first, then you encourage the probiotics to come back, and at that point the probiotics actually will do what they're supposed to. But not the other way around, which is what most people do who are recommended probiotics as a candida treatment. They take them from day one, and that's just a waste of money.
Well, what really terrifies me is these rounds of antibiotics for UTIs, just going round and round continuously, which is only going to make the problem worse.
Well, what happens is they cause the bacteria to become drug resistant. The same thing, there's a corollary. UTIs and sinus infections. These are two areas where you find a similar thing happening. And UTIs and sinus infections, the patient is getting hit with so many antibiotics so frequently that the bacteria they have becomes mutated and it becomes drug resistant. Not only that, but they develop candida. Now, the interesting thing about candida in the sinus or the urinary tract is it amplifies the effects of any pathogenic bacteria. And that's a very interesting thing about candida and why candida behaves so differently one person to the next. So when you do a stool test, a microbiome test on somebody, you get a readout of all the good bacteria they have, all the bad bacteria they have, and all the bacteria they have, which we could consider could go either way. And when you have candida there, all that bad bacteria is amplified. And depending on what that bacteria will tend to do, that's what gives you this individual case. So as an example, a person with candida, if they have Klebsiella pneumoniae, that Klebsiella is known to cause bacterial pneumonia. So this person's going to have more lung issues. They may get pneumonia. They may have a chronic cough. They may have chronic congestion because the candida is amplifying the effect of that bacteria. If they have a bacteria that causes prostate problems, well, then that bacteria is going to be amplified by the candida. So whatever you have going on, if candida is there, it just aggravates and amplifies the effect of that bacteria. That's why it's kind of interesting to study these cases, and you get to see how they end up that way based on pulling apart their biome and seeing all the pieces that are fitting together. And then you see, well, here's the end result of having this combination of candida, perhaps these parasites, and this group of bacteria.
So this would fall into the category of stealth infections, right? These subtle infections that are happening that we don't even understand are predisposition due to the major either use of antibiotics or growth of candida that are
the reason why they would be stealth is because of biofilm. Biofilm is produced by bacteria, and it's particularly produced by Marcons, which are multiple antibiotic resistant bacteria. Those bacteria produce biofilm, and the biofilm is like a coating. Literally, it's like a coating of mucus that the bacteria can surround itself with and surround any other bad pathogen with. When you come across a colony of pathogens in your intestinal tract, they're all sort of clinging together, covered in mucus or biofilm. And that's what makes them untouchable to your immune system.
Yeah, pretty darn clever, because they talk to each other and can raise even more defenses.
This is true. They can communicate with each other. And it's also pretty evident now that as organisms, live organisms, they also somehow communicate with us on a lower consciousness level, because this is where you'll see people with candida crave sugar like crazy, and once you get rid of the candida, the sugar cravings stop.
Right.
And of course, sugar is the main food for candida.
And I know that I was going to say you have YouTube talking about this and giving more instruction and direction. So what's the first step? What do people need to do if they have a chronic candida issue or candida overgrowth that they're aware of?
The first thing they need to do is document it, because you need to have a baseline of what your levels are. So you need to have some kind of test so that you know what your candida levels are. This way, when you come back to check on them, you can see whether or not the treatment you're doing is working or has worked and the candida is gone. That's the very first thing the person needs to do. Then they need to get on a program to purge themselves of parasites and harmful intestinal flora. They need to do some kind of colon cleanse to get rid of parasites. And this is my phase zero program. What we use are different proprietary products I've made, which mechanically remove and dislodge harmful bacteria, candida, and parasites from the gut. That's like kind of the first layer of treatment that we use. Then when that's completed, they need to go on program where they'll be able to destroy the candida systemically all through their body, because the candida will move from your colon through your lymph system. It can get into your lungs, your spleen, your liver. It can go anywhere. So they're going to want to take botanicals that can kill the candida systemically, botanicals that will absorb into the blood in the lymph system and kill the candida everywhere. That's the next step. When that's completed, they're going to want to get on a program that has intestinal antifungals that are able to work really deep in the gut lining in order to kill that candida which resides there, because that's the candida that stops the probiotics from coming back. So in cases like that, we use antifungals which are fatty acid-based, because fatty acid-based antifungals have the ability to absorb deep into the intestinal tract like you were putting oil on leather, you see. So when a person has done that and they've gotten rid of that deep-rooted candida, now they can start working on getting their biome back by adding probiotics and prebiotics. And time after time, we find it's the prebiotics that are actually more important than the probiotic, because a prebiotic is something which in some way alters the environment or helps the environment be able to house the probiotic. So if someone just goes on a probiotic, there's no guarantee it's going to do anything, because it may not be in the proper pH environment. There may not be the proper, let's say, elasticity of the collagen in the intestinal tract where the probiotic can stick to. If somebody has leaky gut syndrome, the probiotics also won't stick because of that thin, permeable intestinal tract. So the prebiotics have to be there to feed the probiotic and encourage its growth and give it an environment that's safe for it to grow in. That's the hardest part of the whole thing in getting rid of the candida. It's getting the probiotics to come back correctly. But let's say you do that. Now, the next thing you need to do is you need to look at your metabolism. You need to look at your biochemistry to see if there's anything wrong in your body that would tend to cause the candida to come back. That could be a thyroid problem. That low thyroid will do that, and everyone's always wondering why that is. There's one simple reason. If your body temperature is too low, candida will overgrow. That's the one thing that we didn't mention before, different than taking antibiotics or drugs, because mostly candida is thought of as being iatrogenic, which is doctor-induced with a medication. But if your temperature is too low, the candida also overgrows. People don't really understand the effect of body temperature and why your body temperature has to be in a proper range for your health. But that's a story for another day. That's just another aspect of it. You could have estrogen problems. You could have imbalanced hormones, which will cause the candida to come back. If your cortisol levels are too high, candida will come back. If you have excessive levels of mercury and all the toxic metals we talked about before, they're very often a key underlying cause of candida. If your blood sugar is too high, it can come back. So there's a whole host of metabolic issues ranging from toxic metals to low body temperature and thyroid problems to hormone imbalances that will cause candida to come back even after you've gone through all this trouble to get rid of it. So that needs to be resolved. Otherwise, the candida may continue to reoccur.
So we're talking about a total overhaul of our health.
That's the only way. It's the only way it works, because what got you in trouble in the first place was being imbalanced. In a sense, candida is only a symptom of having other imbalances.
You know, I think that's the point you're driving home. It's like one thing connects to another. And unless you can address it at the most fundamental level, underlying issues, you can't really create true healing and optimal health. We've got to unravel this puzzle within our body.
This is true. And going back to the very, very beginning of the conversation today, it all begins with the correct testing. Because if you don't do the correct testing, you don't know what's wrong. You can't go based on what you're seeing on TV commercials or what you see with Dr. Oz talking about or something like this. There may be truth in all of that, but you don't know if that applies to you, because everyone is biochemically individual. Dr. Roger Williams talked about this in the 60s. He was the first one to coin the term biochemical individuality, and we are all as individual as our genetics. And this is why you must get testing to determine what specifically is correct for you.
You know, and I'm just really going to encourage people to follow up in this conversation and contact you, because if you're there filled with a closet full of vitamins and they're not working, and you have health issues or energy issues or memory issues, you don't know what's going on. You actually must have a roadmap to follow and a guide to help you. Otherwise, you're just wasting your time and money and potentially becoming more chronically ill. So it just makes so much sense to have a roadmap to follow. This is what you're offering.
What I often tell people to do to try to get some kind of idea of this is take a piece of paper and draw zero to whatever your present age is. And now try to go back and spot at what age you were when a lot of the problems started to occur. Then you want to go earlier. And you want to look to see what happened before that, maybe a year or two or 3 years before that. Did you, for any reason, have to go on antibiotics? Were you in an accident that required you to go on antibiotics or medications? Did you have some kind of, let's say, major change in your diet or something else that happened? But normally, if people really sit down and look at this, they'll spot something that occurred that was what threw everything off. And that can give you a good idea of then where you sit now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because anytime you have antibiotics or steroids, you're at high risk, right, of creating a candida overgrowth.
Antibiotics, steroids, antacids also can do it. Chemotherapy would be an obvious thing. Like people who undergo chemotherapy and radiation, that can also destroy your biome. If you even are someone who swims in a chlorinated pool frequently, swallowing some of that chlorine water on a a repeated basis could also kill your biome. So anything the person does that destroys their biome then will cause candida, and then from that you get the whole host of events we discussed earlier.
Wow, such a big topic, right? So overwhelming, but it just sounds like people have to really commit to the whole program if they really want to get their health back. And like you said, rheumatoid arthritis might be associated with candida overgrowth, sugar cravings, fogginess, fatigue. I mean, you know, behaviors that and functions that are vital for us to live a full life. So why struggle? And, you know, if you're just recommended niastatin or some antifungal, as you said, it's ineffective after a while. It's only going to worsen the problem.
Niastatin is the number one drug that causes candida to become drug resistant. So that's why there's a Japanese species of candida now called Candida auris, which is completely drug resistant to every known drug. And the only thing that's been effective has been combining the drugs with botanicals, and particularly cinnamon oil. When you combine it with the pharmaceuticals, that's actually been found now to be a reliable treatment against the strain of candida.
Such an interesting conversation. So I hope people are really listening and, you know, having some aha moments, because what we're touching upon is, you know, 30% of the population probably doesn't even realize they're infected with it. And that includes men as well. So,
yes,
you know,
most people think about it only being a woman's problem, because women get vaginal yeast infections. Well, on the other hand, men can have infections in their groin, which are fungal, like what we call jock itch, happens all the time to them. You can have athlete's foot or fungus in your nails, which could also be a sign of having the internal candida problem. So it can happen to both sexes. It's a little bit more towards the woman's side because of estrogen. Candida itself is a very estrogenic organism. Candida stimulates the body to be more sensitive to estrogen. Candida itself is very sensitive to estrogen. When a woman's estrogen rises, the candida grows very quickly, which is why it bounces all over the place when someone has PMS, you see.
Right. Wow. So a severe PMS could be related to a candida overgrowth.
Yes, because the normal pattern in somebody with bad PMS is they have low estrogen to a high estrogen to a low progesterone, which is a typical pattern for candida, and it's also a pattern for hypothyroidism. So there's that thyroid connection again coming in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is such a fascinating conversation. Probably have to have you back, because thyroid is a huge story. So what's the percentage of people diagnosed with low thyroid? That's huge as well in the population.
Yeah, but you want to know something. The more accurate diagnosis is for the person to take their body temperature. Most people who have low thyroid are often told they don't, because their blood work looks good. And that's only, unfortunately, 50% of what there is to know about thyroid is contained in the blood work. The other 50% is what happens in your cells. And the only way you can understand that is to do the test I talked about earlier, the hair mineral test, because the hair mineral test tells you the mineral balance in your tissues, and how your thyroid hormone works is based on all the trace minerals that are in your tissues.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that the doctors, quote unquote, who are thyroid experts, it's actually comical sometimes, because what they know is only related to the blood work that they do. They don't even consider body temperatures, and they know nothing about how a thyroid hormone is metabolized in your cell. There was a book written many years ago called Hypothyroidism, the Unsuspected Illness, by a doctor named Broda Barnes. And Broda Barnes pointed out that people who had low body temperatures were all low thyroid. It didn't make any difference what their blood test said. He didn't understand exactly why that was at the time. Now we understand why that is. It's due to the fact that you can have normal levels of thyroid hormone in your blood because your thyroid gland is producing them, but the thyroid hormone when it gets into your bloodstream and starts to hit the receptor sites, isn't being utilized. And that's due to mineral imbalances, trace mineral imbalances in your tissues. So 50% of treating or understanding a thyroid problem is looking at your blood work. The other 50% is looking at those trace minerals, which regulate the utilization of the hormone, and looking at your body temperature as a marker for the overall effect that your hormone is having on your tissues. Because the whole point is, your body makes thyroid hormone to produce heat and energy. And if your body temperature isn't correct, it means your thyroid hormone's not working correctly.
Mm-hmm. You know, traditionally people used to always test their morning temperature to see, and to chart it to see how it, you know, how it's doing, to see how your metabolism is working. But the problem now, when you do blood work and they look at your TSH, they, you know, anything that falls within the reference range, they assume is fine. And we know reference ranges don't give us the whole story. So many people, and God bless my local GP, you know, lovely, lovely woman, but that's the story. You know, you get the blood work done, and if you're within reference range, even though it's the low end of the reference range, everything is fine. So these issues are ignored and can lead.
Well, just looking at blood work, there's a lot more to look at in blood work than just the TSH. You've got to look at a person's reverse T3. Reverse T3 is very important to look at. And then the other thing that people ignore are what may be suppressing thyroid function. As an example, insulin levels. If your fasting insulin is too high, it suppresses your thyroid hormone. If your leptin levels are too low, it affects thyroid hormone. If your cortisol or estrogen is too high, it suppresses your thyroid hormone. If your mercury levels or copper levels are too high, it suppresses the activity of the thyroid hormone. So it's not always that you have to add something like the thyroid hormone or some vitamins. Very often it may be that you've got to take something away, like some of these items that I'm referring to now.
You know, Dr. Biamonte, I wrote a book called Hormone Heresy. So a while back, I was looking into the whole hormone story and the myths and misinformation. And I'm horrified these days when I see Oprah and all these people going full bore promoting HRT and saying HRT now is totally safe, protects against breast cancer, as opposed to the truth about it, that it is a risk factor and increases estrogen levels, will put on more weight on women who take these hormones and lead to more risk of these thyroid and candida issues. So that must horrify you to see this trend going on now.
Well, you know, it comes from the fact that the bioidentical hormones are safer than the synthetic hormones. That's where this was born from. But that's still not telling you that you're taking the right hormone or the right amount unless you get tested. Because a person, like as an example, we have patients who go on HRT, and some of them need much higher doses than another person. But we eventually find out why. Actually, we find out why rather quickly. If you have somebody who's going on HRT who has high copper levels, they need far less estrogen than somebody with normal or low copper, because that copper makes their body more sensitive to the estrogen. And the same thing can be found of all the other hormones. All the other hormones have key minerals that work with them that will heighten their receptor sites. For estrogen, it's copper. For progesterone, it's zinc. For testosterone, it's manganese. And for cortisol, it's potassium storage in your tissues. So depending on what mineral you have that's more dominant, this will tell you how you're going to, you can almost predict how someone might respond to the HRT by knowing their mineral pattern.
So here's the question I have. So obviously you are a proponent of using it when appropriate. At what point do women ever get the guidance to withdraw off of it or to manage without it? Because that seems to be an open-ended story. Women just are taking it into their 70s or beyond, which I think is crazy.
Well, I think it depends on the person. When someone comes to us and they have hormone problems, if they're someone who's under 40, we always try to handle the hormone problems from more of a metabolic or natural standpoint by giving them substances that try to let's say, get their hormone production back on chart. So we'll be more apt to use amino acids and different herbs and things to try to stimulate their body to start making the hormones again on their own. Because in a young person, that should be doable if they're under 40. When you're over 40, we have found that not always to be as a success. People over 40 actually will need to take the bioidentical hormones to get their hormones back in play. And to answer your question, if you look at just about every culture, everybody has something in their culture that they take, which, well, except for America where we take drugs, but every other culture has something that they've taken traditionally, which helps to act like a youth formula for them.
Absolutely, and I've been working with traditional Chinese medicine for 30 years, and that's what I used going through menopause without any problems, to be honest, mm-hmm. and cleaning up my diet as well, getting rid of the sugar and the alcohol.
So there are different substances that exist, just depends on what ethnic you're talking about, that people have taken as an invigorating tonic to help stimulate their body to make hormones again like they were younger. Almost every nationality or ethnic or every part of the world has a substance. It's usually a plant that grows natively to that area, which people have used, which helps stimulate your hormones to come back. So that's the spectrum that I see. I see we have the person, initially the young person who needs some kind of help, so that we try to do that metabolically. We have the person as he gets over 50 who needs that help, and at that point we have to use the bioidentical sometimes. But then eventually you want to get them on some type of rejuvenative plant formula, which is going to help boost their hormones naturally. The only thing you have to be careful with those formulas is that they're not too high in estrogen, because a lot of them tend to be high in estrone, which is not, it's the weakest of all the estrogens, but it still could be a little bit too much for them.
But do you have concerns for those doctors who, you know, are now prescribing it because it's kind of trendy again, with no end point in sight? I mean, does that concern you that women may be prescribed these long-term without assessing what they really need and how to keep them safe?
Where it really becomes a problem is when you have 70 and 80-year-old women who are starting to menstruate again, because those hormones are stimulating that cycle, that rhythm again, even though they don't have any eggs left in their body to actually have a legitimate menstrual cycle. They're getting an artificial one because of the rhythm of the hormones. And I don't think that's natural at that point. You know, if God meant us to menstruate until we were in our 90s, it would be that way.
No, it's horrifying. You become really blood deficient. It'd be terrible.
I have to agree with you.
Interesting. So here we are to round things up again. Let's talk about the key things. First of all, we're all biochemically individual and unique. And if we want to restore health, we need to have some assessment done. And that's what Dr. Biomente is offering. If you contact him, it's health-truth.com. And you can set up a consultation and can go from there to set up the testing, which is really interesting to me, actually, to do some. And then the other website where the focus is on Candida, it's New York, spelled out New York City Candida Doctor.com. So New York City Candida Doctor.com. And I know you have some great information and YouTubes on this topic, but Candida, I think you laid it out, is a really big story that unfortunately gets missed along the way, but critical for restoring.
Yeah. Candida remains a new topic because it's not, even though it's old, in some cases it's considered old because it was first really brought to light in the 70s, but it's new in the sense that it hasn't been resolved. And I've heard stories of patients saying, oh no, I don't have Candida, that's from 20 years ago or something. Well, that's kind of ridiculous, because anybody could get Candida just by tripping their biome over. And it, as we went over here, it goes through so many different symptoms and affects you in so many different ways that unless you really test to rule it out, you're doing yourself a big, really a disgrace, because we've seen people who had horrible candida. They got better and they didn't complete their treatment. And then 20 years later, they came back and they have a whole new set of symptoms. And they tell us, you know, I thought my candida was gone and it was good enough when you handled all my digestive problems. But now I have arthritis, or I have lupus, or I have, you know, whatever their problem is. And they said, I watched a YouTube video of this other doctor talking about how it causes all these autoimmune conditions. And I said, oh my God, maybe I still have the candida.
You know, as we're talking, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. I just hope people who are listening will really take this to heart. If you have some health challenge, you need to address the underlying issues and imbalances that are generating the condition. You just can't go from medication to medication or from vitamin to vitamin. It's not good enough. It's like trying to hit the bullseye with, your eyes blindfolded. You can't do it. So that's why I just so appreciate what you're doing, Dr. Biamonte, and the work you've put into creating a program and a strategy that people can follow to get true results. So,
thank you very much.
It's been a great conversation. It's been a great conversation. It's something into the show. Hang in there, Dr. Biamonte. Don't hang up. But I just want to remind people, if you want to learn more or to organize a consultation and set up a program of testing, go to health.truth.com. And the other website, all about Candida, is New York City, spelled out, candidadoctor.com for more information. This has been a truly transformative and life-saving conversation, Dr. Biamonte. Thank you so much for the great work that you've done over these years and your commitment to support all of us being the best we can be.
I'm more than happy to be here. Thank you very much.
And to all of you listening, thanks again for joining me on What Women Must Know. Every week we have these profound conversations, so be sure to join me. You can go to my website, which is drsherylsilman.com, or my Facebook page, What Women Must Know, opt-in, and you'll get all of these great conversations. So until next time, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.